evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, September 14, 2015. 7 people were killed as a group of cattle keepers take random shots at civilians in Maridi town.
It was a member of the pastoralist community who was killed, and then they took a revenge attack on members of the host community, which resulted in the number of deaths that night.
And South Sudan Army and rebel forces battle over the control of Wau Shiluk in Upper Nile State.
So they attack our position, and also they attack us in the southeast in a certain area called Wit County. So they attack our position. And also today, the government also attacked our position in Wau Shiluk.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The parties to South Sudan's conflict began a series of workshops yesterday in Addis Ababa on how to make the recently signed peace deal work. IGAD spokesman Haile Michael says negotiators for President Salva Kiir's government, for Riek Machar's opposition movement, for former political detainees and other stakeholders in South Sudan's peace process are attending the workshops, which ran until Thursday. Haile Michael says the participants yesterday discussed the drawdown of forces from both sides to battalion size, where those forces will be contained. He says today participants are discussing security arrangements during a 30-month transitional period and the demilitarization of the national capital, Juba, and 3 other towns. Everything that is being discussed at the workshop is included in the peace deal brokered by IGAD and signed last month by all sides. Haile Michael says the workshop in Addis Ababa are, quote, the most critical phase of negotiation, end quote. He says if the workshop participants cannot agree on security arrangements and demilitarization of towns that have been flashpoints in South Sudan's 20-month conflict, bringing lasting peace to South Sudan will be difficult, if not impossible. President Kiir's spokesman, Ateng Wek Ateng, told VOA this weekend that the government expects the workshop will lead to full implementation of the peace deal.
Even the president on Tuesday will be addressing the nations, asking the nations and all the citizens of South Sudan to be able to cooperate with the government to ensure the full implementation of the agreement that he has signed. Because there must be peace in South Sudan in order for South Sudan to be able to join the rest of the nations in prosperity and development.
The peace agreement for South Sudan was signed on August 17 by Machar for the SPLM in opposition and by Pagana Mum for the group of former detainees. President Kiir raised several objections to the deal and only signed it 9 days later on August 26. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has invited both President Kiir and Machar to take part in a head of state meeting in New York at the end of this month. The meeting will be held on the sidelines of the United Nations General Assembly. The aim of the meeting will be to galvanize international support for implementation of the South Sudan peace deal, Ban says in the invitation. Even as the two warring sides come together for the workshop to implement the peace agreement, there has been more deadly fighting in Unity State Capital Bentiu. SPLA military spokesman Colonel Philip Aguer says SPLM in opposition forces attacked army positions yesterday in clashes that lasted for over 5 hours.
So the attack continued from 4 a.m. up to midday. It targeted the headquarters of the civil administration. Civilians were displaced. And the SPLA fought in self-defense and managed to repulse the attackers. The attack left behind it 5 SPLA soldiers were killed, and one woman was unfortunately killed by the rebels. One of our soldiers was wounded. The commissioner of Wit County, who is a civilian, was wounded in his office.
Colonel Aguer says the government is calling on the international community to intervene to ensure that ceasefire is fully implemented.
Last week, calling upon the United Nations, United States of America, in the absence of a monitoring, IGAD monitoring mechanism, for the United Nations and the United States of America to provide a quick provisional ceasefire monitoring system.
At the same time, SPLM in opposition, Deputy Military Spokesman Dickson Galwak accuses the government of attacking its positions in Bentiu.
So they attack us in the northern part of battleground in Unity State, in a certain place called Nialdiu. Nialdiu, it is the southern part of Unity State capital, Bentiu. So they attack our position, and also they attack us in the southeast, in a certain area called Guit County. So they attack our position. And also today, the government also attack our position in Waushuluk, in Upper Nile State.
Colonel Aguer says he's been informed by his commanders that the situation today in Bentiu is calm. Dickson Galwak says fighting continues today in Waushuluk. Galwak says they are still verifying how many rebel forces were killed in the weekend clashes across Bentiu and Waushuluk. Seven people have been shot dead and two wounded as a wave of violence sweeps over Maridi County in western Equatoria State. VOA fellow Tito Justin reports from Washington.
The violence began Friday when a farmer was shot dead while walking in his fields near Maridi Town. Another farmer was wounded in the same attack. The following day, two people were murdered in Maridi Town and one other person was wounded. On Saturday evening, the violence moved to Haigabati residential area in Maridi, where several more people were killed. Among them was a journalist who worked until last year for community radio station Maridi FM. It is unclear why any of the other victims were targeted, but Deputy Governor Sapana Abui says the incidents may be revenge attack by cattle keepers against the farmers.
It was a member of the pastoralist community who was killed, and then they took a revenge attack on members of the host community, which resulted in the number of deaths that night.
Clashes between cattle keepers and farmers are nothing new in Maridi County. In June, 11 civilians were killed in fighting between the two groups. Many others fled the area. 11 youths were detained on suspicion of being behind those attacks, but they were released without charge because of a lack of evidence. Hundreds of civilians have been hiding in the bush since this latest round of violence erupted on Friday. According to reports from Maridi, security officials are patrolling the area, but that did not stop a new outbreak of violence on Monday.
The shooting are continuing. The shooting is behind the town. But I'm going now to the House of Commissioners.
That was Maridi County Executive Director John Ezekiel. He spoke to us briefly before rushing to a meeting with the commissioner on the violence in the county. Deputy Governor Boy warned that even if those responsible for attacks are identified, arresting them is difficult and could cause the fighting to intensify.
You know, when people are moving in a group like a small mob, it's not easy just to go and round them up. It may even escalate. Since they are heavily armed, they will also fire back. So it is a matter of cornering them and then to pick the known one from among the other members of the community.
Last week, authorities in Western Equatoria State imposed the curfew on the state capital Yambio in an effort to crack down on crime after four people were killed in an attack in the town. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Washington.
Several villages around Jonglei, state capital of Bor, are underwater and thousands of people have been displaced following days of heavy rain. The flooding comes in spite of a 19-kilometer lee that was built by UN peacekeepers last year to prevent flooding in Bor. Jacob Achek prepared this report for VOA from Bor.
In the village of Ayafanjak, about 1 kilometer outside of Bor, people wade knee-deep through one of many large holes of stagnant water. There is a sour smelling in the air where the water was collected after 2 days of heavy rain last week. Several thousand families in Haid villages, both north and south of Bor, have been forced out of their homes by the flooded waters.
To drain the town, that means we have to open up drainage areas in places that are inhabited by people. If you are living actually in the water drainage, we'll be able to ask you to cooperate so that we drain 1,000 houses, we sacrifice your part of your flood. So that would be understood as in good gesture. No one is being targeted. But the areas that had been indicated as waterways must be open for this town to be drained.
That's Bor Mayor Nyal Majak Nyal. He says officials are planning to dig channel and drain the water away from the village toward the Nile River so that people displaced by the flooding can return home and go back to work. But there is a problem. Last year, Korean UN peacekeepers constructed a 19-kilometer dike along the Nile in Bor to prevent seasonal flooding caused by the river passing its bank. The dike has prevented flooding from the river, but this year it was heavily rained that inundated villages. Nyal said the problem with the dike is that it prevents rainwater from flooding out of village to the river. Jonglei State Information Minister Judy Jonglei Boyeri said the state government is partly to blame for the problem.
When we met the dike, we didn't actually open the way or access for water to go to the river. So this is our problem now. And this is a rainwater. It's not water actually coming from the river. Rainwater, if we get access for water to go to the river, then we don't have a problem.
Nyal said it will cost $1 million to buy a mobile water pump and dig channel to drain the flooded water from the village. People affected by the flooding says the fundings cannot come soon enough. 58-year-old Mary Ajo Alier says she is used to endure some flooding each year, but it is not usually as bad as it is this time. Ajo owns three houses, and all three are flooded, she says. Ajo, she is trying to remain in one of her house, but will probably have to leave because of the flooding. She says she is worried about diseases in the stagnant water around her village. Last year, when there was flooding, Ajo says the government distributed mosquito net and food to people. This year, she says she doesn't know where to go for help. Nyal said state officials will need assistance from aid agencies to be able to assist people like Ajo. Neither the mayor nor the state information minister was able to say when they expect the stagnant rainwater to be drained to the Nile. For VOA News, I'm Jacob Achek in Juba.
South Sudan's largest airline is on the brink of bankruptcy. The chairman of South Sudan's Supreme Airlines, Ayei Gwang Ayei, says he has until Friday to rescue funding to pay workers' salary, maintenance fee, insurance, and other expenses and save the company. Ayei blames South Sudan's Supreme's financial troubles on the recently ended 20-month conflict in the country. The airline has 14 aircraft that fly from Juba to all 10 states in South Sudan. But in recent months, Ayei says it has been impossible to appropriate funds to pay the airline's running costs.
Sharkat Tehran huwa laaja alami bishagalu be dollar izbeer be dollar.
He says those included license renewal, insurance, crew and engineer's salary and fuel cost. But because of the severe liquidity crisis in South Sudan, the central bank has been releasing only limited amount of U.S. dollars to local banks and businesses. And some businessmen allege that most of the hard currency that is available has been used to buy weapons and ammunition to fight rebels in different parts of the country.
Conflict fact. Being so supreme airline was our Malia, well, bank Mercury.
Ayei says South Sudan's Supreme charges its passengers in the local currency under the terms of a deal the airline has with the central bank. South Supreme is then supposed to be able to exchange those South Sudanese pounds for dollars at the official rate of 3.16 pounds to the dollar. But because of the limited supply of dollars, Aye says, his business, like many other, has to buy foreign currency on the black market where the exchange rate is 15 pounds to the dollar. Aye says he can't afford that.
المؤسسة ما شغال لمجال الطيران فقط. شغال في مجال الطيران.
He says South Sudan will lose more than a commercial airline if the foreign currency crisis continues. Aye says he also needs U.S. dollar to run several hospitals that provide healthcare services to South Sudanese. He says, like South Spring, the hospital charges patients in pounds but buy medicine with dollars. Aye says South Spring could be saved if the government directs the central bank to sell him dollars at the official rate. South Sudan Spring is headquartered in Juba and employs more than 300 people nationwide. All of them would be out of job if the airline is allowed to close its doors. That report was prepared by Nabil Biagio in Juba. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, IMC donates medical supplies to Wawa Hospital. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what or who inspires you?
My inspiration is this great African-American who is called Martin Luther. This guy has inspired me so very much. You know, when I was in my secondary level, I happened to listen to his speeches.
My auntie, she really inspires me with the way she handles things, manages her home, her business. It really helps me and boosts my energy to go on and move on in my career and my family as well.
What inspires me is positivity or optimism. I'm a very positive person. I believe anything you put yourself to do can be done with the right attitude.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The staff at Wau Teaching Hospital are smiling today after receiving a shipment of medical equipment that includes solar panel system worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, courtesy of the International Medical Corps, or IMC. Hospital officials say the special delivery will raise performance standards at the facility and allow patients to receive medical care in their own community rather than having to travel abroad. Dimo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Wau.
For many years, Wau Teaching Hospital has suffered from a shortage of drugs and doctors, poor electricity and overall substandard service. But with the arrival of the new shipment from IMC, the organization that began working at the hospital in January, the hospital has undergone many positive transformations. The hospital received 78 solar panels, 2 X-ray machines and other equipment for the dental and referral clinic departments. Tabu Francis, IMC's medical coordinator in Wau, says the solar panels will light a large section of the hospital that will firstly improve services at the hospital.
Previously, we've been providing electricity mainly using the generator. And again, in discussion with the State Ministry of Health of Western Barakusal, we've moved on to decide to install solar system for a large part of the hospital. This is estimated to cost about $259,000. And the first part of the installment is already done. Today, we are receiving the second part, which constitutes of 98 batteries, solar panels, sorry, and 70 batteries plus the other accessories. We've also delivered some other equipment, which includes 2 X-ray machine, 1 ultrasound machine, an anesthesia machine.
Authorities say this is only the first step in a long journey the hospital is making to upgrade its standards to a full teaching hospital with fully trained local medical practitioners. Dr. James Ukelo, Western Baal Gazal's State Ministry of Health Director General, says with these improvements, the hospital will be able to handle major medical procedures locally.
We used to refer patients to Juba, Khartoum, or other countries just because specialists and equipment like ultrasounds are missing. But now, We have it. Also, we received x-rays. We have only two specialists, so we have to send more to Khartoum for training.
Wukelo says a lack of electricity and clean water has been another major challenge at the teaching hospital.
Now, we have most of our sections connected with water. Light also was a challenge, but these days, if you come, you'll find light in some hours. But with the economic situation, we have requested the need for solar to complement the generator. And now, we have them brought and other units installed. This will give us light for 24 hours.
Nurses are also excited about the new equipment. Nursing ward supervisor Rita Andrea says she is surprised that these changes have happened in a relatively short period of time.
Now we have lights in most of these wards, which is helping the nurses give medication to patients at the right time before the hospital is in a blackout for more than 4 days and things get difficult.
And that means patients are happier too. For VOA, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, reporting in WOW.
Still in WOW, the International Committee for Red Cross wrapped up a training session for more than 20 Western Bahr al-Ghazal police officers on ethics and how to treat civilians this past weekend. As Michael Atit reports for VOA from WOW, the four-day session was part of a countrywide effort to foster a better relationship between the police and South Sudanese communities.
Traffic Police Officer Labuk Makwachkon, who took part in the training, says officers like herself were reminded that all citizens are guaranteed basic human rights, no matter what the situation is at hand. And she says officers learn that the medical assistance is the first thing to provide if someone is injured in an accident.
We have learned how to handle people while in detention or people injured in an accident. We should take them to hospital and other procedures can be followed. These kinds of procedures can really help the police in our country after the long period of war.
According to an order issued in July by the Office of the Inspector General of South Sudan Police Service, injuries resulting from rape and routine traffic accidents must be handled first, and that filing out forms can be dealt with later. Michael Dines is the ICRC Regional Delegation Officer who facilitated the training. He says police in South Sudan need to professionalize their daily work.
Re-emphasizing as well international standards relative to the use of force and firearms to search, arrest and detention. Jobs which the police have to do on a day-to-day basis and jobs which can influence the public in a positive or negative way.
20-year-old Alfred Akon Kuch, a resident of Haifahal residential area in WOW, says some police officers have been involved in nighttime robberies across the town and says obviously that kind of criminal activity severely damaged their image in the community.
Some of the police are doing good while others are not doing according to the government size. Others are beginning as a robbery. They deceive the government when they are inside that they are going to search for. But when they went outside, they do their own jobs, apart from which they have been told to go and do.
This past June, Western Bahr al-Ghazal State Governor Rizik Zakaria Hassan accused WOW police officers of looting and committing robberies in various communities. Stanley Jonathan Bonner, who directs the police state operation that oversee protests or strikes, says the ICRC training taught officers new skills for interacting with citizens involved in public activism. He says he now realizes that using excessive force on protesters is counterproductive.
Now, they have given us key points on how to deal with citizens until we gain their trust. If the citizens don't trust us, they will not give us necessary information to pursue investigations. But now, we know how to draw the community closer to us.
Andrew Chibak represents the police administration in WOW. He admits there are shortcomings in the state's police forces, and they could all need additional training.
Sometimes, we police officers are lacking information on how to do our duty. We need to cure our minds, not because we are sick mentally, but because we don't have enough information. We need to know more about how police should behave while on duty. We need to perform according to the international standards.
The training is the third kind of it in the country. The police officers who went through the training are expected to share the information they have learned with their fellow officers. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Wau.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of our top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. Even as the two warring sides come together for a workshop in Addis Ababa on implementing the peace deal, there has been more deadly violence, this time in Unity, state capital of Bentiu. SPLA Army spokesman Colonel Philip Aguirre says rebel forces attacked army positions yesterday in clashes that lasted over 5 hours. Colonel Aguirre says the government is calling on the international community, including the U.S., to intervene to ensure that the ceasefire is fully implemented. At the same time, SPLA and opposition deputy military spokesperson Dixon Gatlock accuses the government of attacking its positions in Bentiu. In other violence over the weekend, 7 people were killed and 2 others wounded in Maridi County in western Equatoria State. The violence there began on Friday when a farmer was shot and killed near Maridi town. Another farmer was wounded in that same attack while working in his fields. On Saturday, 2 people were killed in Maridi and another was wounded. On Saturday evening, the violence moved to the High Gabat residential area of Maridi, where several more people were killed. Among them was a reporter who worked until last year for a community radio station there. It's unclear why any of the other victims were targeted, but Deputy Governor Sapana Abui says the incidents may be revenge attacks by cattle keepers against farmers. Clashes between cattle keepers and farmers have continued for months in Maridi County. In June, 11 civilians were killed in fighting between the two groups. Many others have fled the area. Finally, the two warring sides in South Sudan's conflict began a series of workshops yesterday in Addis on how to implement the peace deal. IGAD spokesman Holly Michael says negotiators for the government, for the rebels, and for the former political detainees, among others, will be attending the workshop through Thursday. Michael says the participants discussed the drawdown of forces from both sides and where those forces will be stationed. They also talked about security arrangements during the 30-month transitional period and the demilitarization of Juba and 3 other towns as spelled out in the peace agreement. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, Carol. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Doro by DJ Koblon. Yeah. Been listening to DJ Koblon with the song Duro. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Touching me, hey, say you must marry me.